The Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes don't expect Northwestern's purchase of Kerr Dam to halt the tribe's eventual ownership of the dam. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
We'll also tell you about a new Forest Service appeals process. And in our feature interview, News Director Sally Mock talks with the president of the National Forest Foundation about a new poll of American attitudes about their national forests. Kerr Dam on the Flathead Indian Reservation is one of the 11 Montana dams Northwestern Energy plans to buy from PPL Montana. The Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes have been working to get ownership of Kerr Dam since they got the option to buy it in 1985, and they plan to continue to complete the purchase by 2015, according to Brian Lipscomb, CEO of the tribal corporation formed to finalize the purchase. Lipscomb says he wasn't surprised to hear this week that Northwestern has reached an agreement to buy PPL Montana's Montana dams, but he was surprised by the timing. Lipscomb says he doesn't expect the change in ownership to impact the tribe's efforts to purchase Kerr Dam in 2 years.
Until there's actually a transfer of the FERC license from PPL to Northwestern, we'll continue to talk with PPL Montana. So depending on how those transfers occur over the next several months, that will determine impacts, if any, on the conversation about conveyance price and ultimately the transfer of the project.
Lipscomb says in the meantime, the tribes will continue their negotiations with PPL Montana.
Of course, all of the obligations to transfer the facility are in the license itself, and that license will transfer, and those obligations will transfer over as well, and the timing of them as well. So we are in the process of arbitration right now. We're in binding arbitration with PPL Montana over the acquisition price. That's scheduled to have a ruling by March of 2014. So just don't know about the impacts of that on this transfer or vice versa yet.
Lipscomb says the tribes do not expect they will have to start over from zero in negotiating a purchase price for Kerr Dam.
If Northwestern were to acquire the facility and have the license transferred to them during the arbitration, then presumably they would take the place of PPL Montana in the arbitration. If they do it after the binding arbitration, there is a ruling then that also transfers over to the new licensee.
A Northwestern Energy spokesman says the company expects the tribes to continue their effort to purchase Kerr Dam, and they plan to work with them when and if the time comes. Overall, Lipscomb supports Northwestern's purchase of the other Montana dams from PPL Montana.
The benefit of those assets will stay in Montana and not go to Allentown, Pennsylvania, so that's a good thing for all of us in Montana. That's been a good thing from the tribe's perspective as we take over Kerr, and now if Northwestern takes the rest of those hydro facilities, it's good for the rest of the citizens of Montana from that perspective.
Brian Lipscomb is CEO of Energy Keepers, Inc., the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribal Corporation seeking to purchase and operate Kerr Dam.
And in other news from around the state, Cascade County officials say one person has died after three BNSF railway locomotives collided with a pickup truck at a crossing southeast of Great Falls. BNSF railway spokesman Matt Jones says the crash happened at about 1:10 this afternoon. The Great Falls Tribune reports the vehicle was pushed about a quarter mile down the track. Jones says the crossing is marked with flashing lights and stop signs, but no gates. He says none of the three people on the train were hurt.
A prosecutor says the furor over the 30-day sentence given to a Montana teacher who raped a 14-year-old girl offers a chance to clean up holes in how the state sentences criminals. 54-year-old Stacey Rambold was released from prison this week after fulfilling the term handed down by District Judge G. Todd Baugh, who commented that victim Charisse Morales was, quote, older than her chronological age, unquote. Rambold's sentence is now under review by the state's high court. Yellowstone County Attorney Scott Twido said today he's hopeful justices will clarify sentencing statutes that are interpreted differently from case to case. Twido added that prosecutors' earlier request that Rambold receive 20 years with 10 years suspended remains appropriate. Morales killed herself before the case went to trial.
Officials on the Rocky Boy Indian Reservation are searching for a missing 24-year-old man. The Chippewa Cree tribal government said yesterday Cody Trottier was last seen early on September 21st in the Bono Village area of Rocky Boy. The Havre Daily News reports Trottier is 6 feet tall and weighs 200 pounds. He was wearing a yellow and pink plaid short-sleeved shirt, jeans, cowboy boots, and a cowboy hat. Anyone with information is asked to call Rocky Boy Police at 1-406-395-4513.
A 32-year-old Butte man is charged with killing his eight-week-old daughter last month. The Montana Standard reports Matthew John Blaz was arrested yesterday and is charged with deliberate homicide in the August 16th death of Madison Jolene Blaz. Charging documents say the baby's death was originally reported as an accidental fall, but an autopsy determined Madison died of abusive head trauma. Court records say Blaz was with the baby at the time she suffered the fatal injuries.
A 76-year-old Haverman has been ordered to pay nearly $84,000 in restitution in a workers' compensation fraud case. The U.S. Attorney's Office says U.S. District Judge Dana Christensen also sentenced William Zudera to 4 years on probation yesterday. Zudera pleaded guilty to mail fraud in June for failing to disclose that he owed a profitable business that would have made him ineligible for approximately $277,500 in benefits he received from 2001 to 2012. Prosecutors say while Zudera was telling the Department of Labor he was not working and had no income, tax returns from 2002 through 2010 showed his shooting supply business had gross receipts ranging from $500,000 to $750,000 and made a profit every year except 2006.
A Missoula woman who was arrested while trying to sell a stolen necklace also faces drug charges after police found she was carrying several kinds of prescription pills. The Missoulian reports 43-year-old Shirley Dolores York appeared in justice court yesterday for theft and three counts of felony drug possession. Her bail was set at $10,000. Charging documents say York is suspected of stealing a diamond-encrusted necklace from Honey Jewelry on September 20th and then offering to sell it on Wednesday to a business associate of the jewelry store owner. Missoula police arrested York when she arrived to sell the necklace. Officers found she was carrying morphine, Xanax, and hydrocodone pills.
A large portion of the Forest Service appeals process came to a halt today, and a new replacement system begins tomorrow. Agency officials say it will ultimately lead to better, more informed, and collaborative public land management decisions. Its official title is a bit of a bureaucratic mouthful, the project-level pre-decisional administrative review process. The Forest Service Region 1 Appeals and Objections Coordinator Raymond Smith says it's more casually referred to as the objections process. Under the now outdated system, anyone who had a problem with a decision could appeal after it had been made.
In this change, now if someone has a concern about a project, they have the opportunity to object to it before the decision is made and sit down and talk with the responsible line officer who's going to make that decision and with that line officer's supervisor, the forest supervisor or the regional forester, before the decision is made, and therefore have the potential to work out any differences before that decision is made rather than after it is made, as in the appeal process.
Smith says the revision still encourages public input during all stages of project planning.
And say, once again, what do you think? So this gives the public one more chance to participate in the process before the decision is made. What we found out in the appeal process is sometimes we still have people who are not pleased with the decision that we've already made, and now that the decision is made, we can't really change it much. Under the objection process, we give them one last chance to sit down with us and work out a decision that will work for everybody involved.
Congress directed the agency to take this new approach.
We've already experimented with this a number of years ago. You may have recalled the Healthy Forest Restoration Act that Congress put together. In that act, they developed this objection process, this pre-decisional review process. And we found that a lot of that works really well. And so Congress said, we want you, the Forest Service, to put together a process similar to that for all your other projects, not just those projects that fit under the Healthy Forest Restoration Act. So we're doing that. And that starts tomorrow.
Smith points out that any land management plans requiring a decision notice or record of decision will fall under the new objection process, regardless of whether it started under the old appeal system or not.
A new report is confirming that the state's fix for the pension system will bring the teachers' retirement system into compliance. The Legislative Finance Committee was told today that an actuarial report found the system balances in 20 years. Prior to a fix passed by lawmakers earlier this year, the system would have eventually run out of money in the coming decades. The legislation asks both employers and employees to pay more while reducing retiree benefits. The lawmakers were told that even if retirees win an expected lawsuit over their portion, the system would still balance in 29 years. A report last month found that the system for most other public employees is also projected to balance in less than 20 years under the new law.
A Texas motorcycle stuntman has won the right to try to recreate Evel Knievel's Snake River Canyon jump on the 40th anniversary of the failed effort. The Times News reports Big Ed Beckley and Beckley Media LLC of Bridgeport, Texas, bid $943,000 today for a two-year lease on the state land near Twin Falls, where the jump took place in September 1974. Beckley also must pay $25,000 a year to the Idaho Department of Lands for each of the 2 years, have $10 million in commercial liability insurance, and turn over a share of the revenue from the event to the state. Beckley still must obtain permits from the city of Twin Falls and agree to post other bonds and insurance based on the specifics of his plan.
Americans love their national forests. That's the general finding of a new poll commissioned by the National Forest Foundation, the nonprofit partner of the U.S. Forest Service. But that's not the surprising finding of the poll. In this feature interview, Foundation President Bill Posile talks with News Director Sally Mock about the poll results. The bipartisan national poll was conducted by the Republican polling firm Public Opinion Strategies and the Democratic polling firm Fairbank Maslin Mollen Metz & Associates.
We hired these two firms that have a tremendous track record of working together to do really a nonpartisan poll to really understand the pulse of the American public. And so we hired them both to work together on this poll about our national forests.
And why did you want to do the poll, Bill?
Well, there are two reasons. One was an internal reason. We're about to go through a strategic planning process to think about the future direction of the National Forest Foundation and how we can engage the American public in caring for the national forest system in a more meaningful way going forward. So we wanted to test our hypothesis that, you know, these places are valued by the American public, and that was confirmed by the poll. The other reason is external, and we really need to think about how we communicate and engage the public and talk with them about things that are meaningful and relevant in their lives no matter where they live. We in the American West are, you know, our landscapes are dominated here in the community of Missoula. We have national forests, Lolo and Bitterroot, in close proximity, but in many places they don't have as easy an access as we do. And so, you know, it's really important that we engage the public. These are the people's lands. We all have a stake in their future.
They are national forests, after all.
They are our public estate. You know.
Mm-hmm. And the poll did find, and I'm not surprised at this, and I bet you weren't either, that there is overwhelming support across party lines for the national forests. I mean, people do enjoy them and use them and believe that they're important.
Yeah, they're incredibly valuable. We hear more about the iconic national parks of the nation, but national forests are actually used. There are more visits to national forests because they're used more regularly by folks who live in communities like Missoula. But 81% of Americans across the political spectrum believe that funding for national forests shouldn't be cut. And more importantly, 85% of those polled believe have a very positive perspective on the importance of national forests versus 13% being negative, meaning they take lands off the tax rolls and reduce the opportunity for extraction. So 85% of those polled feel that these places are really valuable.
And the statistic is that more than 160 million people visited a national forest last year, and that generated $13 billion for the economy. It's also not just a luxury, these forests. These forests actually do create jobs and revenue for local communities.
Yeah, that's right. And the Forest Service did this study, and I think it's pretty conservative, actually, when we look at other research that's been done, like the Outdoor Industry Association that did a study in 2012 and found that the outdoor activities created, direct jobs of 6.1 million related to that industry, $647 billion in direct consumer spending, about $40 billion in federal tax revenue, $39 billion in state tax revenue. And so that's for, you know, the hunting, fishing, outdoor industry, boating, all of the recreational opportunities that we pursue on public lands across the nation.
One thing the poll found that I think would surprise people is that the majority of people who were polled would support funding for national forests, even if it meant tax increase.
Right. This is really interesting to us because we weren't expecting this. In fact, you know, 72% of those polled felt that additional funding was important, and that included tax-sensitive groups. 63% of seniors and 56% of conservatives felt that funding for national forests is important. This is at a time, Sally, where we're really, as a nation, struggling with the role of government and how much we should pay for government services. It's really interesting to find that people value these places and understand that they require investments in order to maintain their values for the future. And those values are phenomenal. When we look at the, you know, water supply for 123 million people, and you referred to the numbers related to outdoor recreation opportunities, there are economic drivers. There are certainly ecosystem services drivers, meaning water, carbon that's sequestered through forests. So there are many advantages that we, receive as American citizens from these public lands that we probably don't think about on a daily basis when we look out at the national forests that surround our communities.
The trick bill, as you know, is translating public sentiment to public policy. We're at a time right now where Congress is in a stalemate over whether the debt ceiling should be raised,
right,
and whether the federal budget should be cut, not increased. It seems like there's a disconnect between what your poll shows and what certainly some members of Congress believe the public want, and they believe the public wants federal spending cut, not increased.
Right. Well, you, Sally, and all the listeners are aware of what's happening in terms of this polarization, political polarization around our budget, our deficit, and trying to stimulate the economy to the point where we have a solid recovery underway. I can't really comment on the politics. We're not really an advocacy organization, but I do think that it's unfortunate that we constantly come up against these issues. Look at the fire issue as an example. In 2009, Congress passed the Flame Act, and the Flame Act was to create a fund to provide emergency funding to fight fire in really bad fire seasons. In 2011, as a part of budget compromise to keep the government going, they took $200 million out of the funding that was created by the Flame Act. And now the Flame Act really is not funded to the degree that it needs to be in order to deal with this issue that's occurring, as we all know, since 2000 on an annual basis.
And the
basis.
Result of that, if I could interject,
yep,
is that the Forest Service is now robbing Peter to pay Paul from their budget. In other words, taking money from what would be thinning projects or prevention projects and putting them into actually fighting wildfires, because the wildfires have become so horrendous.
That's right. So recently they had to transfer $600 million out of other programs, proactive programs, to provide benefits to the American public and basically shift those funds to be sure that the firefighting, and particularly what's happening in California, that they were prepared to deal with the fires that were underway. So this is a very significant issue, and, you know, there have been some members of Congress who feel that the Flame Act should just be thrown out and that we should really deal with this issue on, like we do with other, emergencies where we have hurricanes or, you know, major flood events where there's disaster assistance, because these are natural disasters. And but again, we come back to the issue that we're going to have to struggle with is, what are we willing to pay for? You know, this poll found that overwhelming, as we've mentioned, people are willing to, at least they say in the poll, that they're willing to pay more for the values that national forests provide. But our representatives in Congress are not necessarily reflecting that, and we could probably talk about a host of issues where there's a disconnect between what the American public wants and what Congress is actually doing.
So, final question for you, Bill. What would you like to come out of this poll? How do you translate the poll results to your organization's recommendation?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an important question. We're really looking at using the poll to help us guide the way we communicate with the American public. We feel that even though the poll indicates this overwhelming value, it's clear to us that if you live in an urban area in the eastern United States, you probably don't think very much about the values of the public estate of national forests to your life. But yet these places are the people's lands. They are owned by each and every one of us. And we all have a stake in their future. And there are benefits that are derived from these public resources that people will benefit from no matter where they live. And so we have to use information in a way to connect with these people, where 82% of the population now, I think we talked about the last time we met, Sally, live in urban suburban areas. We've got to find a way to communicate with them and be sure that they understand that these places are relevant wherever they live, and they're important to the future of this nation. Interesting thing, Sally, in closing, is that the overwhelming response is that public lands are patriotic. They're a part of our national pride, a sense of our national natural patrimony. And I think that's an important issue for us to reflect on as a part of the, the results of the poll.
And there are many countries who do not have that resource that the U.S. does because of its foresight years ago. Well, I have been speaking with Bill Pasile, who's president of the National Forest Foundation, and we've been discussing a poll the foundation commissioned recently that does show overwhelming support for the national forests. Bill, thanks very much.
Thank you. Good to see you, Sally.
For more information about the National Forest Poll, go to the website nationalforests.org.
And now for tonight's weather forecast for west of the Divide. There is a high wind watch in effect from Sunday afternoon through Sunday evening for Butte Blackfoot region. Tonight expect mostly cloudy skies with rain and lows around the mid-30s to lower 40s. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and highs in the mid-50s to lower 60s. Sunday calls for rain and highs in the 50s to lower 60s. For central Montana, there is a high wind watch in effect for tomorrow afternoon through Sunday evening for the Rocky Mountain Front, Eastern Glacier, Cascade, Central and Southern Lewis and Clark counties, Tool, Eastern Ponderay, and Eastern Teton counties. Tonight will be partly cloudy with lows around 35 to 40 degrees. Tomorrow expect partly cloudy skies with highs around 55 to 65 degrees. Sunday look for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain showers, highs in the 60s to 70s. And for southwest Montana, there is another high wind watch in effect for tomorrow afternoon through Sunday evening for Beaverhead, Madison, Jefferson, and Broadwater counties. Tonight will be mostly cloudy with lows in the lower 30s. Tomorrow, expect mostly cloudy skies with highs in the 50s to 60s. Sunday calls for mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain showers. Highs will be around 50 to 60 degrees.
Currently in our listening area, it's a gray day across our listening area. In fact, Helena is 52 degrees with cloudy conditions. In Kalispell, it's cloudy and 51 degrees. Butte has 43 degrees under cloudy skies. Great Falls is cloudy and windy with 56 degrees. Here in Missoula, the temperature under cloudy skies is 47 degrees. It's also 47 and cloudy in Dillon. In Hamilton, it's cloudy and 52 degrees. Libby has 48 degrees with cloudy conditions, and in Polson, skies are cloudy and it's 49 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Sarah Howell.
This year, Montana had the opportunity to expand our Medicaid program to provide affordable, quality health care to 70,000 low-income Montanans. For Rebecca, expanding Medicaid would mean getting treatment for her chronic condition, treatment she's currently unable to get because she makes $80 a month over the current Medicaid eligibility limit. For Jennifer, it means getting care for herself and her three kids in her hometown instead of driving 90 miles round trip to access a sliding scale clinic. For Brenda, expanding Medicaid means finally getting the surgery she needs for a neck injury she got in a car accident 3 years ago. Expanding Medicaid would provide an economic boost across the state, creating jobs and bringing federal tax dollars back into Montana. It would provide health care to 20,000 American Indians and 8,000 uninsured veterans. Expanding Medicaid would stop the closure of rural hospitals and clinics. So it seems like a no-brainer, right? We should jump on this opportunity to make sure our family, neighbors, and community members can get access to health care. Sadly, that's not how this story goes. Despite significant statewide support for expansion, out-of-touch conservative leaders in our state legislature blocked efforts to pass a bill expanding Medicaid in Montana. They did so by refusing to allow the state House to vote on the bill. Throughout the session, reasonable legislators on both sides of the aisle came together to find a compromise. We came very, very close to getting this done. In Montana, working together is a fact of life. We all know each other, we work together well. But in all my years of organizing, I've never seen a coalition as broad, diverse, and strong as the coalition that came together around Medicaid expansion. Healthcare providers, business owners, county commissioners, moms and dads, seniors, hospital administrators, farmers and ranchers, labor unions, low-income families, the list goes on. These folks made phone calls, wrote letters, drove hundreds of miles to the Capitol to testify, in snowy February no less, talked to the press, and shared personal stories. It is nothing more than a shameful failure that conservative legislators ignored their constituents and community members and instead played politics with people's health. Fortunately, the story's not over, and over the summer, the issue has only become more urgent. From hospitals closing their doors in states that failed to expand Medicaid, to parents being forced to rely on extraordinary acts of charity in order to get back to work, we have seen growing evidence that Montana cannot afford to wait. We simply must pursue a special session this fall. We believe we can overcome the opposition of out-of-touch leadership who blocked a bipartisan compromise. We're committed to ensuring that thousands of Montanans get access to the care they need, and earlier this summer we began the process to take Medicaid expansion to the ballot in 2014. We're still working on that option, but must first try to get this done in a special session so that 70,000 Montanans can get access to care sooner and Montana doesn't turn away millions in federal funds to expand Medicaid. Governor Bullock has been a passionate supporter of this issue and has been clear that every option to expand Medicaid is on the table. It will take commitment from legislators on both sides of the aisle to work with Governor Bullock to get this done. Please consider calling Governor Bullock and contacting your legislators to let them know they have your support for working together to expand Medicaid this fall. We believe the stakes are simply too high to quit. We believe it is our responsibility as a state and as a nation to take care of our neighbors and community members, especially those most vulnerable and those going without. Access to health care is not a privilege or meant only for those that can afford it. We have the means, the opportunity, and the values to provide health care to thousands of Montanans. Let's do it. I'm Sarah Howell with Montana Women Vote. Thanks for listening and have a terrific weekend.
Sarah Howell is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.